It's incredible. Dyke houses, can you believe it? It's incredible that anybody would choose sushi over tacos. So who are the sushi eaters? Who would choose that? Okay, not that many. We're okay, David. We're still in the majority here. Burgers, how many are burger people over hot? Wow, how many say no? Yesterdog, East Grand Rapids, hot dogs. About three of us, four of us. All right, and the one I think we're the most curious about, mind reading ability or shape shifting. You got to be careful how you say that, ten times. How many would choose men? I think this would be on our side, mind reading ability. How many would choose the shape shifting? Wow, Lisa, make a note of that, would you? All right. You should have a clue as to what we're talking about today. Any clues? Any guesses? Shape-shifting is exactly not it. We're talking about decision-making for 3 weeks. Okay, if you got your notes, you can pull out your little paper there. If you're online, you can look there. Making godly decisions, because good just isn't enough. Okay, making godly decisions in the new year. It's a great series to start off the year. I tried Googling this. Nobody has an answer to this. How many decisions do you think you make in the course of just one day? More than scores. Our life is filled with decision making. Most of the time, we're making decisions not because we've thought about it, but it's because we've conditioned ourselves over a period of time, correct? Yeah, sometimes it's our decisions are based upon mental thought. Other times it's just emotion, but your emotions always react based upon your thoughts. So both of those drive it, but a lot of times it's just you've been conditioned. So what we want to talk about is decision making. It goes all the way back to the very first two human beings on planet Earth. Their names? Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve. When you look at Genesis chapter 3, if you got your Bibles, you can flip it open there. Very first book of the Bible, by the way, Genesis chapter 3. And we're going to look at verse 6. We see a lot of decisions. Some are implied, some are definite here. But if you put yourself in the story and try to think about their thought process, it's very eye-opening to how we live our lives today. Okay, here's this passage. It's found in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6. When the woman, what's her name? Woman. Careful on who you say that to. When the woman Eve saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food. Now, she saw the tree. Everybody might read this a little bit different. She's walking along. There's a tree. Is that how you view the story? Anyone? Or she's walking along and she already knows that there's a tree there and she chooses to look. Is that a possibility? Because if you read the first two chapters of Genesis, you will see that this tree had been there for a while, and God had actually had a prohibition about eating from the tree, correct? Okay, so you could read the story either way. She's walking along, and she just harmlessly is, you know, looking around and sees the tree. Or she actually is walking through the garden. She knows that there's a tree. She's been told that there's a tree, probably by God, definitely by her husband. She knows there's a tree. She knows she shouldn't eat from it, but yet there's just something that makes her want to look. Have you ever been like that? You know you shouldn't do something, but you look anyway. You move closer anyway. How many of us have seen a sign that says, do not cross this line. Do not take this fork in the road. It made us curious. How many of us have ever had a parent that told us not to do something, and we did it anyway? Sitting with a brother or sister in the back seat of the car, there's a line there, right? Yeah, you stay on your side, you stay on your side. Really? Does that work? No, and somebody's fingers, usually it's the middle child, walks over. True? There's just something within human nature now that makes us want to do that. The problem is this, is that Eve at this point, Adam and Eve, have not fallen into sin, but yet there's something there that they're intrigued. So it goes on, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was terrible for food, she went, sushi, and pleasing to the eye, taco, okay, that's where those two come in, and also desirable for gaining wisdom. It's one thing to see whatever the fruit was. We always put up the proverbial what? We don't know that it was an apple. The fruit of the tree was good for food. How might she have known that? When you read the Bible, do you ever find yourself talking to yourself? I like doing this. Had she ever eaten the apple? Well, I don't know, Don. That's a very good question. What do you think? Well, do you ever do that with yourself? Wow, fun group that we have here. She saw the fruit of the tree was good for food. Is it possible that there could have been other trees similar to that tree that had a similar fruit? Is it possible? You don't know. So I think of all this stuff. And pleasing to the eye, she went, ooh. It wasn't an ugly fruit, but desirable for gaining wisdom. How might she have known that? Hello? She probably had heard that from somebody, do you think? Do you think she just figured that out? She couldn't Google it. You know, it's like PlantNet. You take out your little phone. What is this thing, this weed that I'm playing with? Poison ivy. Okay, you can do that. She didn't have that to go and look at whatever this fruit was. Somehow she already knew and goes on. And also desirable for gaining wisdom. She took some. Do you remember the first thing you ever stole? Not me, you say. I still remember the very first thing that I stole. It was at Hankey's grocery store, corner of Gogwak and 20th Street. It's not there any longer. There's another store there. I was diabolic in my planning of how I saw bazooka bubble gum. It was expensive. One penny at that time. And I saw that multiple times, and I began to lust after that bazooka bubble gum because it's so fun to go and blow it up. But it wasn't just the gum I wanted. What did I want? Yeah, some of you know. And I remember scouting it out. There's the box, and I walk here, and here's Mr. Hankey. None of you have ever done this, correct? Multiple times I rehearsed this. It's kind of like going down to Venezuela and snatching their president. We rehearsed this multiple times. It was just me. It was me and my Delta Force of me. And I remember going into Hankey's, and I can tell you, I walked in the door. Right there was the bubble gum. Here was the counter. There's the register. And I walked over here because there was stuff here I could look at and still go. And Mr. Hankey walked to the back to help a lady buy meat. I'm an old person. I still remember this. She said, Mr. Hankey, can you come help me at the meat counter? Sure, ma'am. I'm like 6-7 years old. I had to walk like a quarter mile to my house. It's burning a hole in my pocket. I feel like I have scored the biggest thing on planet Earth, a penny piece of bubble gum. It's in my pocket. I'm going to chew it under a tree, and I'm going to read the comic. And I got to the house, and I walked into the house. Mom says, where you been? I've been at Hankey's. And here's what she said. What'd you take? How do mothers know this? There was no enjoyment in my life for the next few hours. She sat me down and gave me a lecture. She didn't spank me. She gave me a lecture about how evil and corrupt I was. Then she said, young man, what do you think she said? You know what it's like to walk with your mother a quarter of a mile to return a piece of bubble gum? She didn't take me by the ear. This is how I walk. We walk into Hankey. She's standing there. Mr. Hankey's standing at the register. She says, sir, we have to talk to you. Quote, unquote, he took a piece of gum, didn't he? How do people know this? And if my mother and if Mr. Hankey knew I took a one-cent piece of bubble gum, does God know what you're doing? Now, he's not a mom, but he created those people. And I had to explain to Mr. Hankey why I stole his bubble gum. He says, I know, I've been watching you. He's been eyeballing me, the little criminal, as he comes to a store. Now, why do I say that? Because it's a fun story. Adam and Eve here are going to fall in the same thing, but it has greater consequences than a piece of bubble gum. Now, let's just say that I was 7 at that point. When you were 7, you could still walk by yourself back in those days. I'm now a few years older than that. That image is burned into my brain. I'll never forget it till the day I die, unless I maybe lose it all. Do you realize the things that you do, the decisions that you make, stay with you, either in your conscious memory or your subconscious? They're there, because your mind's a computer. Wow. Back to our story here. It goes on. Took some and ate it. She had been told not to eat it. They knew they shouldn't, what? Eat it. She ate it. All the men at the table, look at the women. Point at them and say, it's your fault. The women ate it, right? Okay. She also gave some to her husband. Can you see the look in her eye? Juice sort of dripping down those luscious lips, doing this. My wife Sherry used to do that really good. She had the look. Like, would you want some of this? He had a choice to make, had a decision to make. Now, it's easy from a male perspective, right? This is the first woman ever created. If there's ever been a perfect woman on planet Earth, it might have been Eve. And they're naked. What would a man do? Okay. It's like, dude, something's wrong with you here. Oh, no, same thing that's wrong with all of us today. She also gave some to her husband, Adam, who was... This is a part, have you ever read this? Who was with her? He didn't just go, yo, Eve, what's going on? He's with her when she sees it, when she takes it, when she eats it. He's with her. You ever ask yourself, why didn't he stop her? A lady, of course. Yeah. Why didn't he say, nay, nay, slap it out of her hand? Why didn't he grab her and hug her and say, honey, what have you done? Why didn't he get down on his knees and say, oh, God, my wife here has been watching too many soap operas. Say something. He didn't do anything except what? Do you see the decisions that were made here? Multiple. It's been said, I've heard this quote many times over the years, We make our decisions. This is brilliant, by the way. It's not one of my brilliant ones, but it is brilliant. We make our decisions or choices, and then our decisions make us. Is that not true? Now, we've got people here who have gone off the deep end in some areas, and we'll just call it some form of addiction. Food, sex, pornography, smoking, alcohol, drug usage, and there's more. True? Do you realize you never become an alcoholic till you what? You never get addicted to porn until you watch it, buy it, look at it. So it's a habit that you create. None of those one time make you any of those addicts. It's repeated what? The choice, the decision to keep doing what you know isn't right or what you know is harmful to you. It's a repeated decision, a conscious decision that then becomes a subconscious decision. It becomes a habit. It's just something you do. And when it's something you do regularly, that's who you are. So we're talking about decision making. A young man came to an executive one day, young businessman at a dinner, and he wanted to ask for some business wisdom. It's like, what's the guy's name, the big multi-billionaire with a stock fund, not Soros? Buffett. Buffett, Warren Buffett, just retired. Do you realize that? Wouldn't you like to have sat down with Warren Buffett a few times and said, so, dude, how do you pick the stocks that you do? The guy's a genius in terms of buying stock and making fortunes and things like that. I would have loved to sat down with somebody like that. When I was a football coach, every season, I coached for 21 seasons, I think, straight, had a couple retirements in there, a couple, three, four more years. Every season I ever coached, I sought out some successful high school or college football coach, sat down with them, and said, I want to pick your brain, not about everything, because that's not possible. This one play, this one maneuver, this one skill, teach me everything you can. I'll sit here for 2 hours. This young businessman goes to this executive and he asks him this question. What's the secret of business success? What's the secret of being a good parent? What's the secret of being a good teacher? What's the secret of being a good farmer? If you could give me any wisdom, what would it be? Wouldn't it be nice to have somebody and have somebody willing to teach you that? This person said, wise decisions. The younger guy said, well, how can I learn to make wise decisions? The rich executive said, through experience. Well, how do you get experience? What do you think he said? Dumb decisions. If you don't learn from your decisions, you will repeat them over and over and over. I've heard numerous people over the decades of ministry talk about relationships, dating relationships, marriage relationships, just flat friendship relationships, work relationships. And they've said something to this effect. It's like I'm spinning in a wheel and I keep doing the same thing over again. It's because you didn't learn from it. We've all made good decisions, okay? Or choices, if you will. And I think if we're honest, most of us have made some bad, that we would call the word bad. Have you ever made a bad decision? A wrong decision. Again, it's your choice. How about a stupid decision? And then we're just going to draw a blank here and you fill in your word. We as humans, we as a church have made good ones and not so good ones. Would you be in agreement with me? If you're lucky and you've made a bad decision, goofy decision, whatever, dumb decision, sometimes you're able to reverse that, but not very often. Because every decision you make costs you something. And every decision you make has consequences. And while you could next time do the right thing, if you've done the wrong thing, sometimes it's cost you something, sometimes there's a consequence that you can't take back. True? One of the hardest lessons we ever have in life is learning that our decisions cost us and they have consequences, and not just for us, but for everyone else around us. And this is where young people have not lived long enough to figure that one out. Well, I just like Billy Bob. I just love the way his hair is green on this side and purple over here. You know, and I just think he's just the hottest thing. And your parents look at you going, what is wrong with your brain? They can see something that you don't, but you're going to keep going ahead with Billy Bob. All those of us that are older, have you ever dated somebody that in hindsight you went, what was I thinking? Don't look at your spouse now. Costs and consequences, you can't always take them back. As Christians, we should seek to make godly decisions. What's the word? Godly. The kind that honor God and the kind that are within His will. That's a godly decision. Notice I didn't use the word right or wrong. It's a decision that honors Him first and foremost, as opposed to decisions that are simply good. Most people in churches today want their kids to grow up to be good people. I cannot even tell you the last time I had a parent when I talked with them, so what's your desire? What's your wishes for your kid? Where the parent said to me, a church parent said, I want my kid to be godly. Most of them will say, I want him to be good student, good, have good friends, good in sports, good in this. Be a good, Samaritan. Be a good something. Why is that in church that we would think that good is better than godly? Have you ever thought about that? What do you want for your kids? What do you want for your marriage? Do you want a godly marriage or just a good marriage? You realize good is nebulous and it changes all of the time based upon your whims, your wants, the ways of the world. But godly decisions don't ever change. They either honor God or they don't honor God. They're either in His will or you can say not. You see, good decisions are those that seem right. Have you ever done anything that seemed right? That benefit us or those that we care about. Are you catching something? The things that I think are right, the things that make me feel good, the things that are good for my friends, my family, or the things a good decision is those that have the fewest consequences. Haven't we all done that? You're driving down the road, you're looking in your rear mirror, you look forward, and there's no police officers. Thank you. You've all been there. And you make a conscious decision. First thing you do, nobody there. And you look at the speedometer thing or the sign, speed sign. Or you look in your car, you look in your phone, and, oh, that's what the speed limit is. It's 35. I'll go 36. Do you realize you just broke the rules? But you justify it because it didn't hurt anybody right then. It got you to where you were going a little bit faster. And it makes you feel good because you got away with the penny piece of bubblegum. I just love coming to church, don't you? Makes you think deep. And here's the deal about godly decisions, good decisions. When you make a good decision, you have no idea really of all the cost or all the consequences, anything down the road. You just live for the here and now. But when you make a godly decision, you have to understand that God is eternal. God is omniscient. He sees everything. He knows everything. He knows your past. He knows your present. And He knows where your decision is going to take you. And God always has our best interests in mind. Here's what it says in Psalm 32:8. I will instruct you, God says, and teach you in the way you sort of could have wanted to go if you care about it. You should go. God says there's a way you, say it, should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. You remember your driving instructor? Some of you might have had a driving instructor that just slept. Most of the driving instructors I know are like, they're shaky. They're watching everything because you haven't learned to watch for things. God's got his eye upon you. He's like my mother and Mr. Hinkey. He cares about you. Otherwise, they just let you destroy yourself. Making godly decisions is critical. Think in the Bible of all the stories that we are familiar with. Many of us have grown up with stories from the Bible that reflect godly decisions, good decisions, and also some terrible decisions. Noah making the ark. Good decision, bad decision. It's a godly decision. It wasn't just good. He did it because God told him to. What about all those people out there playing soccer in the field next to the ark? What are they thinking? The guy's a moron. He has no clue what he's doing. And when it's raining, who was left behind? Was it going to be Noah or was it going to be those people with their soccer ball? Soccer balls float, as do dead bodies. Okay, think about that one. How about Abraham? He didn't attend church. And God one day showed up to this guy who doesn't attend any church, had never heard of church, never sang a gospel song, and never prayed to the one living God. And God showed up to him and he says, Matt, dude, pack it up, follow me. Okay, wives, picture this. Your husband comes home and said, I had this voice speak to me. He said, we're packing up and we're walking. Well, where are we going? Ladies, you moving? Are you going to have a long discussion about this? Abraham moved his family 1,100 miles simply because somebody named God did what? Told him to. How about this person, Lot's wife? Okay, God's going to destroy this town. Walk with me. And God says, do not look back. Ladies, don't eat the apple. What is Lot's wife? We call her salty now. What did she do? God tells you not to do something. And you, what's going on in her head while she's walking? But these are all my friends back there. And what about my house? You know, I put a new rug out there, and I've got flowers in the flower box. What's going to happen to them? And what about my neighbors? God's going to destroy them. Is he going to destroy all of them or most of them? What about my house? Is God going to destroy my house? You see how we do this? We're going to outthink God. Has that ever worked for you? Not too often. How about Moses going to Egypt? I mean, think about it. Here's a bush. Moses is out there doing what a shepherd does. Looking for sheep. Any sheep gone? Is there any lions, tigers, bears, witches, munchkins? And he sees a bush go, phoof. That's what it did. Phoof. Just want to see if you're awake. And he goes over there, and the bush is now talking to him. When was that? Is Tim Reed here? Okay. Tim would know what I mean when he and I have talked with bushes before. Whole nother lifetime ago. But he's talking to a bush, and the bush says, okay, remember 40 years ago when you ran from Egypt? Go back there. But why? No. Up he goes. Back to Egypt. You see, when God tells you to do something, it's for your benefit and the benefit of many people down the line who you don't see yet. We could go on and on and on. You get the gist? A lot of examples in the Bible. Book of James, if you got your Bible, New Testament, turn pretty much, go to the book of Revelation, backtrack just a few pages. You're going to come to the book of James. If you want to do this, it'll be up on the screen. Turn on your phone, whatever you got to do. James chapter 1, verse 5 through verse 8. In James, who was the brother of Jesus, points out in this passage here about some truths about decision making. He says there's a common problem that we all have. Then he gives a prescription to deal with that problem, and ultimately he points out a wonderful blessing that we all have. a promise, a wonderful blessing in a promise. So we see a problem, we see the prescription, and we see a problem. Or I'm sorry, promise. Verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, anybody here want to join my team? You lack any wisdom? No, I've got a college degree. I graduated from high school. You see how smart we think we are? If any of, well, my wife thinks I'm smart. Dude, really? If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God. What should you do? Ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But, don't you love the word but and the word therefore in the Bible? But when you ask, you must believe. And not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. Verse 7, a person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. So you say, oh, I need help in making this decision. Do you really believe that God's going to answer you? Do you believe God's going to give you the truth? Belief in your head is not enough. Belief has to translate itself into the heart and out through the hands and the heels on your feet. In other words, you have to do something with it. Don't say you believe God unless you're willing to do it. James in chapter 1, verse 22 tells us exactly that. Don't just be hearers of the word, be doers of it. It goes on, verse 8. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all that they do. Three things. The first is the problem. We have a problem as humanity, as members of humanity. We are doubtful, we are double-minded, and we're ditzy or dizzy. That's the way humanity is in God's eyes. The word doubt in Greek means to stand separated from yourself. Now picture that. I'm here, but doubt means this. I'm not really sure I should be here. I think I should be there. Means to be here, there, you're not content in either place. That's what the word doubt means. The word double-minded builds upon that image. It means two-souled in the Greek language. In other words, to be pulled apart, divided by loyalties. Well, I sort of like this, but I really like this. Doubt is an intellectual thing. I'm not sure if I should be here. When you talk about being double-minded, it's that I like this, emotion enters in, but I also like this. Did any of you struggle with this in the little game that we played? I sort of like this, I sort of like this, but you gotta choose. We're double-minded about so many things in our life. And then the idea of being dizzy or unstable is a word in the ancient language in which the Bible was written to describe a drunk who's doing what? Staggering around, unable to be in one place. They're unstable. The idea of being dizzy is your head's in a twirl. That's what James is telling us here. There's a problem with humanity. That's what sin has done to us. There's not just one way, meaning God's way. It's there's so many options that we have. True? And the minute you make a choice, you've eliminated all of those options for one. You go, you say, okay, I want to get something to drink. Well, there's Pepsi, there's Coke, there's Fanta, there's all of this stuff, Dr. Pepper. And you go and you go, You got to choose. You can't buy it all. The minute you make a choice, you've put a little notch in your belt. Now, you may choose something else the next time and go, I like that first drink better. Haven't you done that in your life? Until we fall out, little notches in our belt become ruts. They become habits, and habits form your character. The problem is we're doubtful, we're double-minded, and a little bit what? Dizzy. So imagine yourself standing in the road, a fork in the middle of the road. Have you ever heard that? You're trying to make a decision. You doubt, should I go this way or this way? That's intellectual. You're trying to figure out. You're double-minded because I know people that live there and I know people that live there. There's a restaurant here, there's a restaurant. Now your emotion is to it. And then you're unable to make a decision because you're so torn by it all. Have you ever been there in your life? My son, when he went to school at Albion College, he got a business degree over there. He came home. We talked once about this. He said there's a term in the business world called clutter in the marketplace. You ever hear that? Clutter in the marketplace. In other words, you go into the grocery store. This is a problem very true in America because we have so many options, true, in life, of everything. And then there's like if your wife sends you to the store with a list. Guys, you ever been confused? You're looking and go, well, what kind? Do you know how many times I've called home? What do you mean by this? They have boxes. They have bags. They have multiple boxes and sometimes single boxes. What box do you want? And then usually somebody at home will tell you that. Well, you live here. Don't you know? Now you've got that conversation going on. All you wanted to know is what particular box. Okay, I digress. Confusion. Clutter in the marketplace. Too many options. And what business people have learned is if there's too many options and they're too similar, people will not buy. They'll turn around and walk out. Any of you ever done that? You get frustrated. So now it's all up to marketing. How colorful can it be? How big can it be? How flashy can the display be? And that's what people go for. Not necessarily what's even good for you. You buy what they want you to buy. Isn't that the way Satan operates in our life? So for all of those that are sitting here, you're a little bit undecided about making decisions, okay? You ever hear of Dr. Seuss? We're going to watch a little video clip about decision making.
Did I ever tell you about the young bird who came to two sides at the fork of the road? One said to place one and the other place two. So the zone had to make.
Zode, I think in your online notes, if you want to see that clip, the clip is on your online note. Where we are in time, I want you to spend a few minutes at your table and think about the decisions that you have coming into the new year. What are those? Some of them you don't want to talk about, but what's a decision that you're looking at? And it may be to buy a car. It could be to go back to school. It could be become a Detroit Lions fan. I don't know what your decision is, but just verbalize it. Sometimes we feel all alone, and so we're going, oh, do I do one, do I do two, et cetera, and you end up doing nothing. Or you make a stupid move. By sharing a couple of the decisions you have, feel free to do this. If you can't, that's all right. But then people at the table could pray for you. And just pray that God gives you a sense of wisdom about what to do. Because we want to make godly decisions and not just, what's the word? Good decision. Good, there's nothing wrong with good decision, but if God's not in it, it's not a good decision. All right? So at your table, a couple minutes. We're going to give you three, 4 minutes. What's the decision you got? And if you want prayers, ask somebody at your table, could you pray for that for me? Do it. All right, everyone. Hopefully you had a chance to share some of your decisions, and hopefully some of you prayed. I went through 1/3 of my message today. Not even a third. Close to it. So next week, we're going to finish this up, hopefully. We're looking at James. James talks about the problem. Okay? We're going to look at God's prescription, and then we're going to look at the great promise that God has left us in our decision-making, that if we trust upon Him, He's going to do some things for us. So the next week, we'll finish up those elements, and then the third week of this series, I'll just give some practical tips, if you will. These are common sense things rooted in the Bible that people have applied to their lives when you have to make a decision. Because a lot of things in the Bible are very black and white. Would you agree? Okay, and then there's things in our world that are gray. And I'll bet there's far more gray decisions that we have to make, meaning that's not in the Bible, than what we actually could number. It's like, should I buy a car, not buy a car? Should I go to Lansing, not go to Lansing? Should I watch this particular TV show or not? Because that's not in the Bible. The Bible gives us principles. So we'll look at just some common sense principles rooted in scriptures that third week. All right. The best way that you can, and you'll hear more about this next week, that you can really root yourself into God's will and understanding His will for your life is to understand His Word. He's given the Bible to us as a game plan for our life. This year we're doing a Bible reading plan. It's based on something called a harmony. It's a harmony study in which you take Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, looking at the life of Jesus, and lay them out in a chronological format from the very first thing Jesus did to the very last thing, as recorded in the four Gospels. The Bible says it's like walking with Jesus. You can't walk with Jesus, live your life like Jesus, if you don't understand His life. Would you agree? So it's step one. Step two, how did Jesus do this? How did He make disciples? What does He want me to do? What's my next step? So we use a harmony of the Gospels in which those are all laid out chronologically, step by step. Sometimes you're going to read just something in Matthew. The next step in his life, you're going to see the book of Mark and the book of Luke. Very few times is the same story given to us in all four Gospels. And why that's important is it gives you all of the details of any particular story that God wants you to understand. If you only read, say, the book of Matthew, you're leaving out other details that are only given in Mark or Luke or in John. Yes? So I'm going to have my Harmony of the Gospels out on the table. You can look at this. This will be in the emails that go out this week, showing you the book that you could buy. I always go to Amazon and buy them used if you care to look at a harmony. We've got multiple ones in the office you could come and look at. It's a fabulous way to read. This is your study in which you can write things, but I want to see the passages right next to each other in any given spot. Are you with me? If you're not quite tracking with me, see me after church, and we'll be glad to help you to understand that and take a personal look at it. Decision-making. There's nobody here that's got their whole act together. Would you agree? We've all made good. We've all made bad. Hopefully, some of us have actually made godly decisions that honor Him. That's the reason we're doing this series in January. It's a fabulous way to start. Father, for our people, we ask that Your hand be upon us. You help us to grow in our faith. Help us to know You so well through our Bible reading and through our prayer life that we understand Your will and we're able to make godly decisions and not just settle for things that benefit us that we justify as calling good. So over the next 2 weeks, Lord, inspire us, motivate us to know You better so that we can serve You, we pray. Amen. Gary?